Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Artisans, A Vanishing Chinese Village by Shen Fu Yu. Translated by Jeremy Tiang. Narrated by P.J. Oakland. Introduction. From when I was born, my family and I lived in a close-knit society. The people I knew in my hometown were either relatives or nearby neighbors, with several generations of affection between us. It's not like everything was sunshine and rainbows. We had misunderstandings and quarrels, and sometimes even came to blows. Still, we knew each other well enough that these never developed into lasting grudges. For several centuries, rules were formed around customs, ways of thinking, and agreements. So although the village grew larger and larger, there was peace despite its many disputes. My hometown is crisscrossing rows of white walls with dark roof tiles. It is ripples swaying through the wheat when the wind blows. It is the fallen ginkgo leaves that cover the ground. I'm middle-aged now, and have traveled from my village to the big city, from China to countries thousands of miles away. And though I've stayed in many places, none of them have made me feel as at ease as my hometown. Where I come from, people speak in loud voices with thick country accents, and their behavior is coarse. All these things are now dear to me, although they once filled me with loathing. As a young man, these signifiers of village life made me ashamed, and all I wanted was to free myself of them. Until I turned 18, I couldn't stand what seemed to me like a dark future in the village. My father was obsessed with not losing face, and the non-stop stream of sarcastic remarks he directed at me were particularly hurtful. When I left the village, I was determined never to return. Now, though, I have gained some empathy. I return to my hometown so my father doesn't lose face, or for the new year, or even for the birth anniversary of some long-departed ancestor. Even though I've been going back more often, the swift decay of the village still shocks me. There are no longer any young people there, not even children. Virtually every time I return, I see a newly added grave. Along with the declining population, one old house after another falls into disrepair and then disappears. What used to be farmland is becoming occupied by the factories of the encroaching city. My hometown is no longer my hometown. Waves of anguish wash over me. I've realized that this is how hometowns work. The more energy you expend in getting away, the greater the force that pulls you back. And yet the road back has become overgrown with the weeds of time and can no longer be seen. When our hometowns vanish, we become rootless people, individual atoms existing in isolation within the ice-cold city. We who left our hometowns have nothing to rely on and are anxiously absorbed by the prosperity of urban life. Surrounding us are the faces of familiar strangers. Yes, I know that all around me are lost souls, drifting by as lonely and solitary as I am. We have shared memories. In these recollections are the people we were close to in our hometowns, once so full of life. We knew them as the carpenter, the gardener, the barber, the bricklayer, and so on. Apart from being artisans, all of them were also farmers. And now the farmers are gone too. This memoir only goes back 100 years, the limit of my father's and grandfather's memories. the people they described to me, as well as the ones I've known, are mostly gone now. They exist only in family records, just a line or two each. And yet each person, no matter how humble, contains an epic poem of their own. These villagers may be unknown to the wider world, but they reflect 100 years of history, especially the enormous changes that have taken place in Chinese society over the last 30 years. They constitute an era, and have also been swallowed by this era. A roughshod time, but also a tender one. And as long as this tenderness exists, so does my hometown. Prologue. Once upon a time, everything you needed in life could be found at the front and back of your house. Back then, life was straightforward, fresh, and warm as the palm of your hand. People treated each other with compassion and care. At Gaogang in Jiangsu, the Yangtze River makes a large bend. A smaller river branches off here, extending eastward. Along it stands a line of ancient ginkgo trees. Follow these another 20-odd kilometers east, and you'll reach Shen Village, where even more ginkgos grow. People call it the Village of Ginkgo Trees. 600 years ago, a man named Shen Liangsan came to this place from Changmen in Jiangsu. He fell in love with this low-lying sandy piece of land and decided to settle here. In 1970, the 17th generation of his lineage was born, including me. Shen Village was now a large settlement with tens of thousands of people. No one could have expected that I and people my age were destined to watch our village decline and fade away. In 2001, after more than a decade away from home, I returned to Shen Village and saw for the first time a deserted house, its doors locked tight. That was the paper craftsman's home. His grave was at the back of the house, in a courtyard whose gate was fastened with a rusty lock. Weeds had sprung up among the green tiles of the roof. Since that day, every few years, I'd notice yet another house had been abandoned and was falling into ruin. After so many years away, I was more familiar with places abroad than with my own hometown, but still felt a sudden jolt of bone-deep sorrow. The people I knew well were withering away one by one. Soon, this village would no longer exist. As a kid, I'd run freely through the wilderness. Now, half of it had been built over with factories. When the steel and cement of the city reaches Shen Village, with its 600 years of history, it may well be reduced to nothing more than a mirage. When I am in Shen Village, the faces of long-gone artisans appear before me. Time and again, they drag me back to bygone eras. I am familiar with these artisans. I used to see them every day. I know every one of them through and through. They came and they went, leaving no trace at all. From ancient times, they have passed their skills on generation by generation. But now the chain has been broken. They are not there, and the village I come from is essentially gone too. I am now an orphan, lost in the big city. I've heard that when a person goes blind, they will eventually forget all the sights they have ever seen. I'm writing this now because I'm afraid that the day will come when I will forget what Shen Village looks like. The Bricklayer. Mr. He was the only doctor in Shen Village. His home stood all alone on higher ground in the center of the village. At his front door was a fairly large yard, and each spring it transformed into a riot of greenery and blossoms. There was a profusion of ginkgo trees and also persimmon, jujube, honey locust, and so on. A great variety growing with abandon. Plenty of flowers, too. On either side of the path from the garden gate to the front door, there were flowering crabapples, red buds, roses, gardenias, and many others I didn't know the names of. In the center of the yard were medicinal herbs, wild asparagus, ranunculus, atractolotus, all attractive and delightfully scented. Everyone's favorites, though, were the peppermint, purslane, and green charetta. Anyone who passed by grabbed a handful to take home. Peppermint can be baked into flatbreads or turned into a broth for noodles. Purslane, fried with eggs, leaves your skin silky smooth. Charetta may not sound particularly appetizing, but eaten as a cold salad, it's good for digestion and detoxing. Mr. He smiled and said hello to everyone, and recommended more edible herbs. The more people helped themselves to his produce, the happier he was. He didn't charge a cent, naturally. Mr. He's herb garden was on our way to and from school. We always stopped to hang out there, chasing butterflies, picking whatever flowers were growing that season. Just one or two, though. If we tried to take more, Mr. He would appear at the doorway of the greenhouse and gently cough, and we'd scatter like the wind. After the rainy season this year, I made a trip back to Shen Village. On the way home, I had to pass by Mr. He's garden. He passed away many years ago, though the villagers left his thatched cottage standing for a long time, in memory of him. No one maintained his garden properly, though. Everyone just went in to plant and harvest whatever they needed. Each time I returned to the village, I walked past his garden, and the fragrance of the medicinal herbs remained intoxicating. On this last trip, though, the garden was gone. In its place, they'd built a church, with a cross rising high from the roof of the new building. In the past, during the few days I was home, the bricklayer was a frequent guest. My father is usually a great host, but he seemed frosty toward the bricklayer. "That man's a Jesus eater. He's stirring up all kinds of trouble in the village," my father said coldly after he'd left. A Jesus eater is what the villagers call a Christian. The nickname probably comes from the Gospel of John in the New Testament, where Jesus says, "Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life, and I will raise him up at the last day." The bricklayer is old now and walks with a limp. When he was young, all the girls from miles around had crushes on him. He was in the People's Liberation Army, and not only was he blessed with clean-cut good looks, he also played the arhu like a dream. He once gave me a 5-pointed star like we'd seen pinned to army caps. It was the greatest treasure of my childhood. On his occasional visits back, his house would be jam-packed with visitors. His future seemed full of promise. Unexpectedly, during the great demobilization, he quietly returned to the village. After a few months at home, he became a bricklayer. He didn't formally become anyone's apprentice. He just followed the other bricklayers around, assisting them, and watching until he knew enough to pick up a trowel and start building walls himself. He was now a bricklayer, though his handiwork, to be honest, was mediocre. Just like that, His halo was gone. Still, although he must have been quite dejected, no one ever heard the bricklayer complain. He was perpetually smiling, busily building bridal chambers for newlyweds to move into. His voice was good, and he was articulate, so he was often called upon to chant the blessing at the start and end of each construction job. Strictly speaking, this task ought to have fallen to the most skilled craftsmen, but few of our village artisans had his stage presence. And what did it mean to chant the blessing? Before starting work, someone had to say auspicious things for the spirits to hear. These words had to be pleasing enough for the spirits to remember them and bestow blessings on the family. During the chanting, the other artisans would keep the beat. The carpenter whacking his axe against a plank, the bricklayer tapping his trowel against a stone. Everyone using whatever tools they were holding, limbs swinging with enthusiasm. As the leader of the chant, the bricklayer received a thick red envelope of cash and was given the seat of honor during meals. Only in these moments did the bricklayer's face glow. The business of building a church in Shun Village was spearheaded by a woman married to someone named Gao Gen, so everyone called her General Gao Gen. General means wife in our local dialect. I was there when Gao Gen got married. He worked at the same foundry as my second uncle. Our families were close anyway, so I got to go to the wedding, even though I was only in middle school at the time. It was a rowdy affair, though I don't remember the details. What left an impression was how pretty the bride was. When I heard people in the village talking about General Gao Gen, I remembered the beautiful woman lifting her red veil when she came out to offer a toast. General Gao Gen was initially a believer in a religion called something or other Gong. After the government banned it, two fellow worshippers from another province hid in her home for a few days, until things got so dangerous that even Shen Village wasn't safe any longer. The three of them fled to the city. When General Gao Gen returned to Shen Village half a year later, she'd surprisingly converted to Christianity. She was the first Christian in Shen Village, and the first missionary. But then there were no young people in Shen Village. They'd all found jobs in the city, leaving behind the old and the infirm. General Gao Gen went household by household, talking to those who'd stayed. Old people are lonely, and if they're unwell, they're suffering and in despair, too. Minor and chronic illnesses were mostly left untreated. For anything major, you'd go into town and get some medicine from the hospital, then come home and dose yourself. Hardly anyone got admitted to the hospital, not even at the very end. Nothing was more important than dying at home. If you could be cured without taking pills or getting injections, so much the better. General Gao Gen went around telling the sick people of Shen Village that as long as you believed in Jesus, you would be healed of all that ailed you. They'd have tried anything at that point, and that's all it took to make believers of them. After all, it was just a matter of showing up every Sunday to hear a little speech, then sticking around to sing a song or two. General Gao Gen gathered the old and weak from four villages in her home. Eventually, they ran out of space and needed a proper church building. As Mr. He was dead, she decided his garden would be the perfect spot. When she set out to demolish Mr. He's thatched cottage, some of the older men asked the village chief to stop her, but he just sighed and said it was out of his jurisdiction. General Gao Gen told her believers to petition the town council, who kicked the request upstairs to the county government. The county said it was best not to make a fuss about religious matters. Didn't they just want a small piece of land? So give it to them. And that's how Mr. He's garden became the site of our village church. Just after the new year, the bricklayer went to Shanghai looking for work. At the train station, he ran into a couple of guys who said they had a job for him. Instead, they lured him to a deserted area, where they took all his money, a few hundred yuan, and bashed him over the head with a blunt object. He made a police report and got sent back to Shen Village. His head throbbed so badly he lay in bed for 3 days. His little brother Walkhead urged him to go to the county hospital, where a doctor solemnly told him, "These X-rays don't look good. You'll need to stay for observation." This examination alone cost more than 1,000 yuan, so there was no way he was willing to be admitted. Walkhead, who'd accompanied him there, didn't escape either. The doctor said he didn't look great and insisted on giving him a checkup. It turned out Walkhead had high blood pressure, and if he didn't start taking medicine for it, he might be in danger. That scared Walkhead so much, he spent a few hundred yuan on pills. When they got back, the two brothers talked it over and decided, "What the hell, let's take it one day at a time." Walkhead didn't bother taking his pills, but instead joined a slurry pump team and headed off to Jiangnan to widen a river. The bricklayer's head hurt so much all he could do was rest at home. Just as the bricklayer was at his lowest, General Gao Gen came knocking at his door. The day after the general's visit, the bricklayer limped over to the construction site of the church. His skills were needed here. Faith really did seem to be effective. The bricklayer's headaches grew less severe, and by the time the church was built, they'd vanished altogether. He was the first person to be baptized in this church. The bricklayer's conversion was a major development for Shen Village's Christian movement. His eloquence and physical strength made him stand out from the crowd. General Gao Gen sent him to study at the big church in the city. A couple of months later, he returned a new man. He'd set aside his trowel and was dressed in black robes clutching a Bible. Now he stood in the humble, solemn church building, his voice resonant and stirring. Shen Village had lost a bricklayer and gained a priest. At the end of that year, the bricklayer's little brother, Walkhead of the high blood pressure, returned to Shen Village with a large sum of money. He'd long forgotten about his diagnosis. At the new year, he renovated his house. At first, he asked his brother for help, but the bricklayer was too busy with his ministering duties. Even if he'd had the time, he wouldn't have come. He no longer did construction work, and his earnings as a priest were pretty good. His congregation had almost doubled. Each week, they put money in the offerings box. The amount didn't matter. 5 yuan was fine, and so was 10. It's the thought that counts. The Gao residence was now a 3-story house. At one point, Gao Gen had been unhappy with his wife, but now they were living in a mansion, he didn't say a word against her. Just let her do as she pleased. Walkhead was upset at his brother's refusal to help, but what could he say? Soon it was almost the new year. On the last day of the old year, Walkhead showed up at the bricklayer's home with a generous array of offerings for their ancestors. According to local custom, the ancestral tablets lived in the home of the eldest son, who would then pass them on to his own eldest son, generation after generation. The bricklayer barred his door to Walkhead. "I'm a man of faith. I don't hold with ancestor worship. You should leave. You can believe in your God and I'll go on worshiping my ancestors. If you do that, you're not entering my home. Walkhead stood in the doorway, stunned, still carrying his basket of fish, meat, steamed buns, and cakes. He walked away and went to see my father. Shun, we have a rebel in our family. The bricklayer says he believes in God and won't let me honor our ancestors. He can believe what he wants, but why won't he let you honor your ancestors? He wouldn't even let me through the door. Said he wouldn't stand for it, afraid I'd clash with his lord. You can't do anything about him believing in God, that's his business. How about this? Move the ancestral tablets to your home. From now on, it's up to you to honor them. After all, if the eldest son dies without leaving any children, then his brother takes over. The way he is now, he might as well be dead. Walkhead nodded. That's how it will have to be. Everyone honors their ancestors at the new year. Even the poorest household manages to put a good spread in front of their ancestors and pray for their continued protection. If I didn't do that, what kind of person would I be? I can be a decent person even if he can't. But Walkhead couldn't get hold of the ancestral tablets. The bricklayer said, "They're gone." "What do you mean they're gone?" "I mean they're gone. Us believers know there's only one God, and we can have no others, which means these things have no place in our homes." "Those tablets are our ancestors. What have you done with them? It doesn't matter if you don't want them, I'll take them. If you don't give them to me today, I won't be celebrating New Year." "I burned them." Walkhead stared at his brother for a long time, unable to say a single word. Finally, he went home. That night, Walkhead's family didn't have their usual year-end meal, nor did they set off any firecrackers. Walkhead sat red-eyed in his living room, murmuring, "Mom, Dad, your dishonorable son burned your ancestral tablets. Now it's the new year, and I have no idea where you are. I can't make offerings to you. Everyone's celebrating and you have nothing to eat or drink. What kind of curse are we bringing upon ourselves?" On the first day of New Year, like the rest of Shun Village, Walkhead went to the ancestral shrine to burn incense. The shrine isn't particularly large, just three tile-roofed rooms around a courtyard. You walk in the main door and there is a chamber to your left, from which sweet-smelling incense smoke emanates. Everyone goes there to honor the tree spirit. On the wall facing the entrance is a mirror frame containing the picture of a withered ginkgo tree. The tree itself is dead, but you could see how magnificently tall it stood. 10 years ago, it was killed by lightning, a great tragedy for our clan. 600 years ago, our first ancestors planted that tree when they settled here. Everyone respected it, worshipped it, and felt its power. Perhaps we believed the spirits of our ancestors lived in its lush foliage. The tree was a symbol of our village. From 4 or 5 miles away, you would catch sight of that ginkgo tree and know you'd reached Shun Village. As a child, I often passed beneath its branches on my way to Gramps' house. The reach of its root system was astonishing. Once I was outside a little provision shop a few hundred yards away when I noticed one of its roots protruding from the ground. It took quite a few of us kids holding hands to encircle its trunk.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?